నమో భగవతే వాసుదేవాయ. ఓం నమో భగవతే వాసుదేవాయ. ఓం నమో భగవతే వాసుదేవాయ. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 3, Text 24, Translation and Commentary by His Divine Grace Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, Founder Acharya of International Society for Krishna Consciousness. Tatakalo sampravritte sammohaya sura divisham buddho nam nanjana sutta kikateshu bhavishyati. Then, in the beginning of Kali Yuga, the Lord will appear as Lord Buddha, the son of Anjana, in the province of Gaya, just for the purpose of deluding those who are envious of the faithful theist. Purport, Lord Buddha, a powerful incarnation of the personality of Godhead, appeared in the province of Gaya, Bihar, as the son of Anjana, and he preached his own conception of non-violence and deprecated even the animal sacrifices sanctioned in the Vedas. At the time when Lord Buddha appeared, the people in general were atheistic and preferred animal flesh to anything else. On the plea of Vedic sacrifice, every place was practically turned into a slaughterhouse, and animal killing was indulged in unrestrictedly. Lord Buddha preached non-violence, taking pity on the poor animals. He preached that he did not believe in the tenets of the Vedas, and stressed the adverse psychological effects incurred by animal killing. Less intelligent men of the age of Kali, who had no faith in God, followed his principle, and for the time being they were trained in moral discipline and non-violence, the preliminary steps for proceeding further on the path of God-realization. He deluded the atheists because such atheists who followed his principles did not believe in God, but they kept their absolute faith in Lord Buddha, who himself was the incarnation of God. Thus, the faithless people were made to believe in God in the form of Lord Buddha. That was the mercy of Lord Buddha. He made the faithless faithful to him. Killing of animals before the advent of Lord Buddha was the most prominent feature of the society. People claimed that these were Vedic sacrifices. When the Vedas are not accepted through the authoritative disciplic succession, the casual readers of the Vedas are misled by the flowery language of that system of knowledge. In the Bhagavad Gita, a comment has been made on such foolish scholars, avipaschitaha, the foolish scholars of Vedic literature who do not care to receive the transcendental message through the transcendental realized sources of disciplic succession, are sure to be bewildered. To them, the ritualistic ceremonies are considered to be all in all. They have no depth of knowledge. According to the Bhagavad Gita, Vedaischasarvaraham eva vedyaha, the whole system of the Vedas is to lead one gradually to the path of the Supreme Lord. The whole theme of Vedic literature is to know the Supreme Lord, the individual soul, the cosmic situation, and the relation between all these items. When the relation is known, the relative function begins. And as a result of such a function, the ultimate goal of life or going back to Godhead takes place in the easiest manner. Unfortunately, unauthorized scholars of the Vedas become captivated by the purificatory ceremonies only, and natural progress is thereby checked. To such bewildered persons of atheistic propensity, Lord Buddha is the emblem of theism. He therefore first of all wanted to check the habit of animal killing. The animal killers are dangerous elements on the path going back to Godhead. There are two types of animal killers. The soul is also sometimes called the animal or the living being. Therefore, both the slaughterers of animals and those who have lost their identity of soul are animal killers. Maharaj Parikshit said that only the animal killer cannot relish the transcendental message of the Supreme Lord. Therefore, if people are to be educated to the path of Godhead, they must be taught first and foremost to stop the process of animal killing as above mentioned. It is nonsensical to say that animal killing has nothing to do with spiritual realization. By this dangerous theory, many so-called sannyasis have sprung up by the grace of Kali Yuga, who preach animal killing under the garb of the Vedas. The subject matter has already been discussed in the conversation between Lord Chaitanya and Maulana Chandkazi Shahab. The animal sacrifice, as stated in the Vedas, is different from the unrestricted animal killing in the slaughterhouse. Because the asuras, or The so-called scholars of Vedic literatures put forward the evidence of animal killing in the Vedas. Lord Buddha superficially denied the authority of the Vedas. This rejection of the Vedas by Lord Buddha was adopted in order to save people from the vice of animal killing, as well as to save the poor animals from the slaughtering process of their big brothers, who clamor for universal brotherhood, peace, justice and equity. There is no justice when there is animal killing. Lord Buddha wanted to stop it completely, and therefore his cult of Ahimsa was propagated not only in India but also outside the country. Technically, Lord Buddha's philosophy is called atheistic because there is no acceptance of the Supreme Lord, and because that system of philosophy denied the authority of the Vedas. But that is an act of camouflage by the Lord. Lord Buddha is the incarnation of Godhead. As such, he is the original propounder of Vedic knowledge. He therefore cannot reject Vedic philosophy. But he rejected it outwardly because the Suradrisha, or the demons who are always envious of the devotees of Godhead, tried to support cow killing or animal killing from the pages of the Vedas. And this is now being done by the modernized sannyasis. Lord Buddha had to reject the authority of the Vedas altogether. This is simply technical, and had it not been so, he would not have been accepted as the incarnation of Godhead. Nor would he have been worshipped in the transcendental songs of the poet Jayadev, who is a Vaishnava Acharya. Lord Buddha preached the preliminary principles of the Vedas in a manner suitable for the time being, and so also did Shankara Acharya, to establish the authority of the Vedas. Therefore both Lord Buddha and Acharya Shankara paved the path of theism, and Vaishnava Acharya, specifically Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, led the people on the path towards the realization of going back to Godhead. We are glad that people are taking an interest in the non-violent movement of Lord Buddha, but will they take the matter very seriously and close these animal slaughterhouses altogether? If not, there is no meaning to the Ahimsa cult. Srimad Bhagavatam was composed just prior to the beginning of the age of Kali, about 5,000 years ago, and Lord Buddha appeared about 2,600 years ago. Therefore, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Lord Buddha is foretold. Such is the authority of this clear scripture. There are many such prophecies, and they are being fulfilled one after another. They will indicate the positive standing of Srimad Bhagavatam, which is without trace of mistake, illusion, cheating, and imperfection, which are the four flaws of all conditioned souls. The liberated souls are above these flaws, therefore they can see and foretell things which are to take place on distant future dates. Today we're going to discuss about something about Lord Buddha and Buddhist ideas. Not that we normally do so. From Prabhupada Lilamrita we hear that in the early days of the Krishna Consciousness Movement in New York, someone approached Prabhupada and asked him that, well, will you be teaching also the Tibetan Book of the Dead? As if Prabhupada was a spiritual teacher who taught so many different things. One day you teach Bhagavad Gita, one day some Buddhist teaching. This is a fashion among modern hodgepodge, kitschery kind of teachers. So today we'll teach something from the Bible, and then tomorrow we'll teach something from the Bhagavad Gita. The next day something from Buddhism. But no, we have our authority. We're reading daily from Srimad Bhagavatam. Because Srimad Bhagavatam describes Lord Buddha, therefore we discuss it. Tomorrow we won't discuss, because tomorrow must be Kalki Avatam. You know? Tomorrow is discussing Kalki. The Lord Buddha is discussed here as an incarnation of the Supreme Lord. At the same time, Buddhism is rejected by the followers of the Vedas. Most specifically because the Buddhists don't accept the Vedas. Vedna maniya bodhaita nasti. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said that the Buddhists are considered atheists because they don't accept the Vedas. Then he went on to say that Mayavadis, they're even worse atheists. Veda sharanasti kyavad bodhakayadik. He said that those who take the Vedas, which is meant for establishing Vedaischasavarahamevavedyaha, Krishna as the purpose of all the Vedas, those who, in the name of the Vedas, preach a kind of Buddhism, in other words, the Mayavadis or Advaitavadis, they're worse than the Buddhists, because at least the Buddhists say you reject the Vedas. that the Mayavadis, they superficially accept the Vedas, but actually they preach that which is against the message of the Vedas. So it's unusual how Buddha is accepted as an avatar. I mean, he's there and we have the avatar stotra of Jayadeva Goswami. Nindasa Yajna Vidhera Shruti Jata Sataya Hridaya Padmini Sataya Hridaya Dashita Pashughata Kishava Dhrita Buddha Sharira Jai Jagadishani. Jayadeva Goswami is glorifying Lord Buddha. For what? For Nindasa Yajna Vidhera Shruti Jata. For blaspheming or criticizing the process of sacrifice as found in the Vedas. But why was he doing that? Because he was feeling very compassionate towards the animals who were becoming victims of so-called sacrifices in the name of the Vedas. This goes on everywhere throughout the world, that a pure religious teaching is given and people twist that and distort that for the sake of their sense gratification. Here we see that in the name of the Vedas, where animal sacrifices are enjoined, not for the sake of killing the animal, because the animal, the whole reason the animal is killed is that the animal will get a better birth, and the brahmanas, they're able to bring the animal back to life. They have that power to show that they're properly fixed up. Therefore, their performance of the sacrifice, that will be, they're competent. Kali Yoga Ashtamayadam Bhavalangyam Sanyasa Pala Paitrikam Devarena Sutatpatim Kalo Panchavi Bharjaye. Five bona fide Vedic activities are forbidden in Kali Yoga. One is horse sacrifice, the next is cow sacrifice. The next is acceptance of sannyas. The next is offering meat to the forefathers. And the next one is begetting a child in the womb of a brother's wife, if the brother himself is incapable of doing so. So these five activities, they are forbidden in Kali Yoga. Because in the case of Ashwamedha and Gomedha, the horse sacrifice and cow sacrifice, no one can bring them back to life. But the so-called follower of the Vedas, they thought, yes, this is very nice. We shall sacrifice an animal and we shall eat. Just like we find in the Jewish system of religion. It is stated that you shall not eat the blood of an animal. So they're very strict. They never eat the blood. They drain the animal's blood out of their body. Then they eat the meat. What it means is that it's clear that they say you shouldn't eat meat. But instead they kill the animal in the most horrible way by bleeding them to death. And then they take that meat. And they're very strict. They won't take otherwise kosher meat. Similarly, Muslims, they can only take meat if that is sanctified. That a priest should be present at the time when the animal is being killed. They have halal meat. So they also have to see that it's all, they have slaughterhouses, special Muslim slaughterhouses where the priest is there and saying all the mantras and this and that. Actually in the desert where this Islam was first preached, the people rarely ate meat anyway. It wasn't that they were eating meat every day. But sometimes they ate, because what can you get in the desert to eat anyway? A few dates and sometimes but they didn't like to kill animals because the animals are very valuable, especially the camel, it's very useful to them. It's mostly the only animal that was in the desert anyway. But now Islam has spread and they want to eat unrestrictedly, so they have an excuse. Similarly in Christianity, it's clear that Jesus Christ wasn't a meat eater. He was born in a family of Essene cult, who believed in reincarnation, and they were vegetarian. So how is it that he says, we find in the Bible, Jesus said, go and eat meat, he tells his followers, because that's their interpretation. Just like, what's the word in Telugu for rice? Annamu, is it? Something like that? Annamu. So in Telugu, when you say to someone, have you eaten your meal, you will say, have you taken anna, isn't it? Because when you eat rice. That's the staple food. In most Indian and in Bengali, aniki bhat khaeche, did you take your meal, means have you eaten rice? It's the same. So similarly, this Bible, this is written in Greek, where people in that country, people are accustomed to eat meat. So that's to have you eaten your meal, they say, have you taken your meat? So Jesus may have said, did you take your meal? So when they put that in Greek, it comes, have you taken your meat? And then they translate into Latin, and from Latin into other languages. And they turn Jesus into a meat eater. But he wasn't. So in so many ways, people like to misinterpret for their sense gratification. So in the beginning of Kali Yuga, people were doing that. So Lord Buddha, he came to teach, mostly his main principle he was teaching, he wanted to teach people ahimsa paramo dharma. The topmost religion is non-violence. Don't kill the animals, be kind to the animals. And although he rejected the Vedas, his system of teaching, it was very similar to the Vedic. If you see the meditation, reincarnation, if you find it in the, what was later of God, Lord Buddha, he didn't speak about the soul, he didn't speak about God. He didn't speak about very much, actually. He gave his sermons, but he didn't give a very complete system of knowledge. So later on in Buddhism, it was all filled in from the Vedic sources, because what other information do they have? Therefore, in Buddhist understanding, the cosmology of the universe is the same as that that's given in the Vedas. They accept the existence of Indra, Yamaraj, all these different things. So Lord Buddha, he didn't speak about God. The people, they were so fallen. He just wanted to save them from animal kingdom. But he spoke, material life is miserable. You have to become liberated from birth and death. You have to attain Nirvana. Nirvana, that word is already there. You'll find in Bhagavad Gita also. The word Nirvana is there. But that has come to be accepted in Buddhism as some kind of impersonal liberation. Buddhists, they don't want to speak of God. They don't even accept the existence of the soul. So it's very difficult. How can they explain? They say you're having reincarnation, and the aim is simply to Nirvana. But then who are you to get reincarnated anyway? If there's no soul, what's getting reincarnated? How can they explain? Now Lord Buddha, he came to teach this non-violent principle. But practically we see in all the Buddhist countries, they are the most enthusiastic meat eaters. In China, Japan, Thailand, all these places, Burma, they eat anything, really. All kinds of things, rats, dogs, cockroaches, snakes. Especially Chinese and Thai people, they're very fond of pigs. One thing is though that at least in most of the traditional Buddhist countries, still they have some kind of taboo against eating cows. So that's good. Although pretty much everything else they eat. Monkeys' brains, all kinds of things. They like to eat and take pleasure in it. Because they have no higher information. Buddhism, if you see, what is the aim? Nirvana. What is that nirvana? Simply stop all existence. So when you're completely frustrated with material life, you may want to stop all existence. But most people are not frustrated. In fact, you'll find that in the Buddhist countries, people are probably the most materialistic anyway. They're very enthusiastic about material life. It's very difficult preaching in the Buddhist countries, actually. Because first of all, people have no idea of God. Another thing is, they're very materialistic people. It's very difficult for them to think of anything transcendental. They're very much concerned with enjoying in this world as we are now. I'm speaking from experience. I spent some time in these countries. Some of them. So the goal of life is simply to stop material existence, but they're not very enthusiastic to stop material existence. And the means to attain it, you have to perform austerities and simply sit and become quiet and do nothing. And so neither the means to neither the goal nor the means to attain it are very desirable. Therefore we find that very few people actually take up Buddhism very seriously. Although they may be superficially Buddhists, they are very busy enjoying material life. And they don't care, even they've heard about reincarnation, but it doesn't strike any fear in them that I may be born as a pig or something like this. I think I told on this trip once before, but once in Thailand I asked someone that, don't you know you're eating so many pigs? In your next life you can become a pig? He said, yes, all right. Then I'll enjoy life as a pig also. The goal of life is to enjoy. This is very much the culture in Thailand especially. The whole goal of life, sanuk. Sanuk means ananda. Everything should be done for the purpose of sanuk. How to enjoy life. Even if you go to, even if someone goes to a business meeting, when they come back, someone may ask them, was the meeting good? Was it profitable? They say, sanuk mahikap. Was it enjoyable? Everything, they think, should be only for the sake of enjoyment. They're absolutely concerned with material enjoyment. And they, beyond that, they don't conceive of anything as being important at all. And if meat eating is enjoyable, then why not? And in the next life, you become a pig, and then you enjoy. Pig is also happy. In other words, their transcendental intelligence is spoiled. Now in the Western countries you see there's an increased interest in Buddhism. Practically Christianity is, it's a failure. In Christianity it doesn't appeal to the modern people. It appears to be very antiquated. Just you believe in God and then when you die someone plays an organ. And you go up and you sail through the clouds and then you get a pair of wings and you play a harp. So it's not very appealing to modern people. You're looking for something more deep maybe. And also Christianity is, philosophically it's empty. Why are we suffering in this world? Because the first man ate an apple. Therefore, we are all suffering. This Nazi concentration camps and get in an accident, completely smashed up, and so many horrible things, horrible diseases. And what is the ultimate cause of this? Because Adam ate an apple. It doesn't really seem to be a very good philosophical understanding. That God is so fair-minded that some millions of years ago someone took a bite from an apple and as a result the whole human race has to suffer eternally. Also they say that if you don't believe in Jesus, in one life, if you don't believe in Jesus, you're going to burn in hell forever. So who will accept? It's not even your own father, he may be a drunkard or whatever, but he's not so cruel. Even if you do something wrong, he might slap you a couple of times, but he won't slap you. You stole some money out of his pocket. So then every time he sees you for the rest of his life, he beats you up. And even your own father, after some time, he'll forgive you, mostly. Not to speak of your eternal loving father, God. You do something wrong, you just don't believe in Jesus, that's all. And then you have to burn in hell forever. There's so many things. The people in the modern age are becoming attracted to Buddhism because Buddhism is supposed to teach about love and be kind and tolerant, and Dalai Lama is a famous figure in the Western world because it's a fashionable thing to be a Buddhist. The Dalai Lama, it's a good thing to support the freedom of Tibet from the nasty Chinese who are dominating it. It's fashionable to be Buddhist, and then you believe in reincarnation, and it's far out. And mostly in the West, the Buddhists are vegetarian also. So now in the Western countries, knowledge of reincarnation has become well established, mostly due to Prabhupada's books. But on the other hand, Prabhupada's books are very heavy. They teach about reincarnation. But on the other hand, there's all this stuff about surrender to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's people that really, they don't want that. So, reincarnation, far out. What will my next life be? Something, what exciting thing will I do in my next life? I'm enjoying in this life, how will I enjoy in my next life? Or maybe I'll just become nirvana, zero. So, accepting reincarnation and sub-religious principles, morality, there's not much morality in this Buddha, they don't teach much, but kindness to all living beings, middle path, peacefulness, and Zen Buddhism, that started to become popular in the 1960s in the West. And Zen Buddhism is some misrepresentation of Zen Buddhism. Even Zen Buddhism is a misrepresentation of Buddhism. And then that was misrepresented in the West. So just people thought it's far out, it's great, it's different. It's something like an LSD trip. So these things have become fashionable. Because if you're a Buddhist, you can be religious and non-religious at the same time. There's no commitment. You just believe in something, but you don't really have to do anything, and you don't have to follow anything in particular. You're just a Buddhist, that's all. So this becoming popular in the West, it's actually very inauspicious, this voidist philosophy. People become not only devoid of a sense of understanding of God, but antagonistic towards the understanding of God. In the Western countries, at least they have some concept of God, Supreme Being. Some idea, although a very, very primitive idea. Some God in heaven with a long beard giving bread. Give us this day our daily bread. God, it's time for bread. Give us some bread. So it's a very, very primitive or childish concept of God. It's still some idea. But Buddhism completely kills any acceptance of a supreme being. And that I saw when I was in Thailand, that Thai people, it's very difficult to get them upset. When they do get upset, they'll kill you. So there's nothing in between. Mostly they're very cool and smiling. And when they get upset, they may be smiling and you're thinking that everything's nice. Inside they're burning. And when that burning comes out, then there's no control. So they don't get upset, because everything's okay. This is Buddhism, hippieism. Everything's okay. Let it be. Do what you like. Let everyone do whatever they like. Everything's all the same. Whatever you like, it's good. Everything's good. This impersonalism, just like we have this Gita Sa. What is that? Jo Vita Ho Jo Achata. Whatever happened in the past, that was good. Jo hota hai, wo bhi acha hota hai. Whatever is going on, it's good. Or jo bhi hoga, wo bhi acha hoga. Whatever happens in the future, that will be good. This is maya. This is stupid. Everything is good. Everything is good. Just smile. Everything is wonderful. Whatever anyone does, just tolerate. Don't get in anyone's case. Everything is good. Everything is nice. So that idea is there. There's this kind of uncommitted, impersonalism, no distinction between right and wrong. Pravritin cha, nivritin cha, janana vidur asuraha. Krishna says in the Gita that those who don't make any distinctions between what is proper and what is not proper, they are demons. The Vedic literatures give clear direction. What is correct? What should be done? What is the actual fact? Many people in the modern age, they dislike that. They think it's too dogmatic. How can you say you're right? There's so many people with so many different opinions. We should respect all opinions. That's nonsense. How can you respect all opinion? If someone's opinion is opposite to someone else's, how can you respect both opinions? Well, you have to respect everyone because everyone is intelligent. No, that's not our standard. The standard is we take Vedic knowledge, which is correct, as received from the Acharyas. It's not that, well, every opinion in it is as good as everyone else's. This is a modern Mahabharata idea. It's all the same. We should listen to everyone's opinion and respect everyone's opinion. Why should we respect everyone's opinion? If someone's opinion is that meat eating is good, why should we respect that? It's not good. It's rascally. Prabhupada shocked the people of the world, both East and West, by openly, repeatedly saying that this modern society, cat and dog, rascal, nonsense. He met so many people, he was introduced to so many people, and often he would just tell them outright, you're nonsense, which is just, it's just not standard etiquette. When you meet someone for the first time, it's only when you know someone very well, then you might say something to them like that. But Prabhupada, even first time meeting, he would say, you're speaking nonsense. People were shocked. That's not the way you behave. That's not proper etiquette. You're supposed to be nice to everyone, especially sadhus. They're supposed to hold a flower, smile nicely, and just say, yes, yes, everything is nice. And they have interfaith conferences in which everyone goes to understand everybody else, and they're all nice to each other. Prabhupada, when he met with Christians, he wouldn't discuss anything with them until they had to admit that meat eating is bogus. Then only, Prabhupada, unless they admitted that, Prabhupada wouldn't go any further in the discussion. That was Prabhupada's interfaith discussion. Why are you eating meat? This is not Jesus Christ's teachings. This is simple. There's no question of discussing religious principles while you're eating meat. How can you call yourself a saintly person? So Prabhupada was very distinct. Any Vaishnava Acharya must be very distinct, not vague. This vagueness has become this vagueness of Mayavada. I mean, so we're talking about Buddhism. Buddhism is the precursor of Mayavada. Practically they're the same. Prachandam Mayavadam such chastram. Prachandam bhodamuchate. Is Mayavada, it is asat chastram. It is covered Buddhism, that's all. Mayavada is supposed to be against Buddhism, but practically they're teaching the same thing, covered Buddhism. So all these ideas that come in the modern world, just be very liberal and respect everybody and don't get in anyone's case, everything nice, everyone's opinion is as good as everyone else. This is all coming from Mayavada. It's not why everyone's opinion is as good as everyone else. That's not the Vedic system. The Vedic system is, you hear from the Shastra, you hear from the Acharya, who tells you what is correct. It's democracy. You listen to everyone's opinion and you take the consensus. And that's not going to help. You have a group of fools, and they all, whichever foolish opinion is most popular, that becomes accepted. Rather, who knows the fact, there may be only one in millions, because everyone in this material world is in illusion. But that one person should be heard. Better listen to one person who knows the fact, than listen to millions who are in illusion. Therefore, we take the opinion of Shastra as coming through the Acharya. And Acharya, his business is not to make some compromise with the so many stupid ideas. But Acharya's business is to establish what is the actual fact. The actual fact is that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We are his eternal servants. Not some vague, everything nice, smile, be nice, smile, be nice, be good. All very good. Be nice. What's nice? In the material world, everyone's going to hell. And simply smiling at each other, that won't help. You have to tell that you want me to call you nice, but no, you're not nice. If you're not serving Krishna, then you're simply a rascal, that's all. Why don't you wake up and understand? Even, you see, here Prabhupada is mentioning even sannyasis, who are supposed to be followers of the Vedic culture. They also promote meat eating. This is, Prabhupada's referring especially to these Ramakrishna Mission sannyasis, who, the great not great, infamous. Vivek Ananda. Vivek means discrimination. But he had no discrimination. He was smoking, eating meat, and he gave this idea that doesn't matter what you eat, it's your consciousness that matters. See, if your consciousness is pure, then you can eat anything. This is rascal. He's a rascal. Do you know that? Vivekananda is a rascal. Rascal number one. Because in the name of Vedic teachings, he taught so many bogus things. He denied the personality of God. And so many rascal things. He said, don't plant tulsi. What is the value of tulsi? You should plant some brinjal, bengal, this eggplant. You can get some benefit from that. You can eat it. What are you going to do with tulsi? So many rascal things, he said. Promoting, he said, even sannyasis, they can eat meat. What is that? Completely going against the Vedic principles. Similarly, we find in the modern age, there are so many so-called Vedic... Actually, because this I was the first, practically, is Ramakrishna Vivekananda. They were the first to mix up the Vedic teachings and say it's all... You can mix it all up any way you like. Jato mat tato pat, whatever path you follow, it's all the same. And you can be a Christian or a Muslim, it's all the same. So after that, so many bogus teachers came out. And similarly, we had this so-called Acharya, Bhagavan, Rajneesh, who is promoting, have sex as much as possible. Now the four things which are forbidden, meat eating, gambling, illicit sex, intoxication, in the name of being Vedic teachers, they're promoting that which is sinful. So we should be very, very careful. There are so many wrong philosophies being promoted in the world. So many wrong ideas. And when people become attracted to such ideas, it's very difficult to dislodge them. If someone thinks, I am a Buddhist, then they can't even hear about God. Or if they become attracted to some rascal teacher like Vivekananda or so-called Osho, he had to give up the name Rajneesh because he had such a bad name. So he recalled himself Osho. So if they become attracted to that, then they become so contaminated by demoniac ideas that they can't hear the pure message of Bhagavad Gita at all. So we should be very careful not to be influenced by these wrong ideas. Hear this, study Srimad Bhagavatam. This is the actual message of the Vedas. Vedyam vastavam atra vastu. This is the actual message of the Vedas. Saram saram hiyudahritam. It is the essence of the essence of the Vedic knowledge. So we're here studying today Srimad Bhagavatam, which is predicting the appearance of Lord Buddha. Srimad Bhagavatam was written 5,000 years ago, and Lord Buddha appeared somewhat 3,000 years ago, like that. So that was predicted, the coming of Lord Buddha. Similarly, Kalki Avatar is predicted. Not this rascal who ran away from Tamil Nadu and is now hiding in Andhra Pradesh. Not that fool. The actual Kalki Avatar we'll discuss tomorrow. So all the things are there. Shastra also predicts that within the Kali Yuga there will be a golden age of Krishna consciousness. 10,000 years, when people will chant the holy names of Krishna. So all these things are predicted. Hare Krishna. Any question? That's the effect of the age of Kali. Due to the age of Kali, everything deteriorates very quickly.
And
It doesn't take much to deteriorate. Someone just has to, it's one thing. It's one essential point of philosophical understanding. If it's misrepresented, then the whole understanding goes out. And then someone else makes another change, and another change. Basically, everyone in this material world is a rascal. That's why we're here. So we prefer to hear some kind of compromised philosophy, or some philosophy that suits our sense gratification. So, any other question?
Why actually the mind is in a degrading state?
Why karma is in a degrading state? Because that? Same thing. Because we are in this world because we are envious of Krishna. We want sense gratification. So therefore, we prefer that which is degraded. We become attracted to that. Those who are envious, they become attracted to demoniac and atheistic views. Moghasha mogha karmanam mogha jnana vichitasa. Rajasim asarim chaiva mohinim. What is it? Mohinim prakritim shita. Those who are demoniac, they're attracted to atheistic views. But the result is that their activities, their philosophical endeavors, everything simply ends in illusion and destruction. It's mentioned in Bhagavad Gita. Therefore, Krishna comes from time to time, dharma samsthapanartha, for the sake of re-establishing the principles of religion, and his devotees also come to do the same thing. And those who are more sincere, they will be attracted to the teachings of Krishna and the acharyas. Prabhupada said that my books will be appreciated by those who are sincere. Those who are not sincere, they won't appreciate them. There aren't that many, are there? What's the problem to understand that? Because you think there should be more, something more simple, because people in Kali Yuga are less intelligent?
Not really. It seems like people
may
would be more
attracted
to Krishna
consciousness
than those more intelligent people.
Well, by taking the Krishna consciousness, then you become more intelligent. That's predicted. There'll be a golden age within the age of Kali. Yajantihi sumedasa. Those of good intelligence, they will worship Chaitanya Mahaprabhu by Sankirtan Yajna. Intelligence becomes, it's not a matter of MSc, PhD or all this, but the intelligence becomes purified by Sankirtan, by chanting. That's Lord Chaitanya's mercy also. Otherwise we find there are philosophers in within the Christian system and this and that. They've written so many books, but they miss the point so badly. They don't understand who the soul is. Actually, if we see the philosophical development of the Christian church, then one of the early Christian fathers, several of them, especially Origen, he was promoting vegetarianism and reincarnation. But then, so the church could have followed him, but instead it followed Augustine, who was just no reincarnation and no vegetarianism. So it was just the trick of Kali. Every acharya, after he comes in, whether it's Ramanuja or Madhva or Jesus or whoever, then from time to time, how his teachings are to be understood, they are defined by subsequent acharyas. That will be there with Prabhupada also. It's already there. There are so many different ideas about what Prabhupada taught. You see, in Madhva Sampradaya, the Madhva's teachings were so... They're placed in such difficult philosophical language, don't they? They all had to be explained through Jayatirtha. Madhva philosophy today means that which is explained by Jayatirtha, not directly Madhva. Similarly, in Sri Sampradaya, they either follow Vedanta Deshika or Lokpilai Acharya. Or Lokpilai Acharya and some long Tamil name, Manimalai, something like that. So there's two distinct schools within, quite distinct. They're very, very deep philosophical differences on several points. So that's always there.
What is
what? What is the nirvana that the Buddhists describe? What happens if you become nirvana? Prabhupada explained that once, that they can merge into the, either into the causal ocean, like the Mayavadis merge into the Brahma Jyoti, they can merge into the causal, the water of the causal ocean. Because their idea is to become void, but there is no void. So you can't actually become void. You can imagine you're void. Just to say you have become part of the void, then you, and then the idea of a person is there immediately, isn't it? And there are so many discrepancies in this Nirvishesha Nirvana, so many discrepancies, which are all pointed out by the previous acharyas. This Prabhupada also, taking the cue from the previous acharyas, has pointed out. If you say all is one, and if one person gets liberated, why not everybody? And how can you say there are no differences? Certainly there is difference. It doesn't correspond with anything that we can see or even imagine to say that there is no difference between anything. And why don't you put your food in through your backside? It's all one whole is the same as the other. Or why eat rice, eat stew? It's all the same. It's all one. It's a meaningless philosophy, but it appeals to those who are demoniac, who want to avoid Krishna. Anything else?
What about the trust and relationship in this deteriorating world and rapidly changing world? Do you think the same trust and belief and relationship will exist in the next millennium?
What do you mean by the next millennium? After the year 2000?
Coming years. Because in this present world we are not able to trust other person. Generally it's happening in the present scenario.
Everything is deteriorating because sense gratification is being promoted more and more. So individual personal sense gratification is considered more and more the goal of life. Somehow or other get money and enjoyment. The sense of duty and responsibility is diminishing. So trust and loving relationship on the material platform means that there's some bond of duty is taken. The husband trusts the wife and vice versa because they're committed to help each other throughout life. But then if you see that's both husband and wife, they're so-called married, but anyway they're still flirting, mixing up with others, and they may run off any time with someone else's wife, then where is the trust? And then love is built on trust. On the spiritual platform, love and trust means ultimately we can only trust Krishna. He's the only one who won't cheat us. Even however much you love or trust your parents or your wife or whatever, ultimately they can't help you because you have to die and go to another body. So whatever help they can extend is only on the material platform. But that is limited by time. However much your parents love you, they have to die and you have to die. So the person we should love and trust is the person who can help us eternally. That means Krishna. You going to say something?
When you say the point about the opinion, not that human opinions are the only one opinion that is clear opinion of God. It does sound like, but in case in our Vaishnava acharyas also have certain aspects that they differ in their opinion.
In some aspects they have different opinions, yes.
How do we understand that?
Well, then you have to hear from your acharya. How does he explain? Difference of opinion may be there. One thing is different perspective of the same absolute truth. Just like some see Vishnu as the source of all incarnation, some see Krishna. But there's no major difference. There's no major difference. Vaishnava acharyas, they all accept Vishnu as supreme and that we are his eternal servants. Even in Vaishnava society, there may be different opinions, and we take the opinions of different Vaishnavas. Consensus. That's also there in Vedic society, that in the absence of any one person to give clear direction, just like there may be Brahmin Sabha, group of Brahmins come together and they discuss on the basis of Shastra, and they come to a consensus. That may also be there. But their discussion should be on the basis of Shastra. That's why you'll see traditionally the king would keep ministers. Ministers means Brahmins, and they would advise him what to do on the basis of Shastra. But Shastra gives general directions, but in each specific case, they may, what exactly to do in a specific case. Shastra cannot legislate every particular instance that will happen in the material world, because you can't. There are so many permutations and combinations that in the material world you can't legislate every single thing. What should be done in each circumstance? Therefore the Brahmins, they study Shastra, and not only that, but by performing austerities and sadhana and living a very pure life and constantly meditating on the subject of Shastra, then they receive inspiration from the Supersoul on how to give the proper answer in each circumstance. Just like you see Prabhupada was traveling all over the world and preaching, and he always had the right answer. So he explained, why is that? Because he's always thinking of this subject. Therefore, he's always fresh. He always knows what to say. So many what?
Also sex that gives birth to
Comment, yeah, so those who are the Even such a short time after Prabhupada's leaving our physical presence, there are so many different interpretations and deviations. And so therefore those who are the faithful followers of Srila Prabhupada should strive to uphold and maintain what is the correct following of Srila Prabhupada. My approach is to write books. I think in the long term that will have its better effect. Otherwise, another way is to get involved in the day-to-day discussions of so many different things, but generally I try to avoid that because there's no end and it tends to become very emotional. So my personal approach is not the only approach, is to write books. Your approach should be to faithfully follow yourself, at least set an example in your own life, and understand clearly what is in Prabhupada's books. Follow that. Don't be attracted to all this. There's so many so-called New Age philosophies, so many different ideas. Better read Prabhupada's books. If you read Prabhupada's books, your intelligence will remain clear.
For
a newcomer, it's difficult because he may get so many things said to him. So newcomers, we should impress upon them the need to study Prabhupada's books very carefully and to find those who are strictly following those books. That we'll see in course of time now. Deviations, in the beginning you can hardly recognize them. Just like if there's a tangent, there are two parallel lines, and then one just goes off at a tangent. In the beginning it still looks like it's parallel, but after some time it becomes more and more distant. So that will be seen in course of time. Yeah, actually what Prabhupada has given us is very simple. Chant Hare Krishna, follow the principles, study Prabhupada's books and preach what's in it. There's nothing very complicated, but people have good imaginations. They like to throw in a little of their own intelligence to improve the Vedic version, and therefore you get deviations. Or you get, the whole thing is you have to see through the eye of Shastra. Something may seem, it may seem to be correct because it's more fitting with popular opinion, and we don't want to be unpopular, so we have to, maybe we should just adjust a little bit so as to be more popular. It seems to make sense. Now why should we preach, for instance, that you never went to the moon if people there, they just think we're stupid, or if they protest against it? Why should we say such things? Isn't it easier just to forget about that and then everyone will like it. And we'll be popular, like the Salvation Army. That idea was given. The Salvation Army, they just fed people. And then they became popular. Well, I don't know how popular they are. So in the same way, we should do lots of welfare activities, and then people will like us. Makes sense, doesn't it? Well, in Armenia, we did so much welfare activities, like during the earthquake and everything, but still, the government-inspired gundas came and attacked us, right? So it's not necessarily true it may seem to be that we'll just do some mundane welfare activities or something that appears to be like that and people will like us. It's not necessarily true. I'm just giving you an example. There are so many different things. Or we should do a lot of rock music and then people will like us because people like rock music. But then You know, we've distributed so many rock music albums, but did anyone ever become a devotee? Or as Prabhupada said, to distribute his books, and do people like his books? Naturally, they're more attracted to rock music albums than books. But still, we see that people become devotees by reading Prabhupada's books. So it's better to stick closely to what Prabhupada has given us. You can't go wrong. I mean, you might have some great idea, but if you're not sure, then you go wrong. If you stick exactly to what Prabhupada said, then you can't go right. You can't go wrong. Jai Hare Krishna. You have another question?
When we started to explain the other day, there were so many beggars passing by, and we didn't...
So many, it was like one after the other.
Yeah. So we didn't really care about them, but the fellow passenger, he was trying to argue with me. He was saying, you're all religious, you're all, God-minded.
Because they think religious means that you should just give money to the poor. This is the idea that's been propagated.
They think service to man is service to God. So
they're saying, we're not saying.
But they were again, you're saying it's a popular saying, and I said,
popular, it's another Ram Krishna Vivekananda nonsense. So that means the professional beggar, they go through the train, they pick up 200 rupees in 2 hours, and you should just indulge them. You can give something to them, and then they should say Hare Krishna. Please get them to say Hare Krishna. But what are you going to do? It's like there was just one after the other, wasn't it? There was one would go and the next one would come. So that's not our philosophy. Is sell books, distribute prasadam. Not that we have to give to every... There's hundreds of professional beggars and we're supposed to give something to them. No, we are beggars. People should give to us, and we're using Krishna's service. They'll go home and watch their TVs and VCRs. And at least in Bombay, it's known that the professional beggars, they're all living at home, they all have TVs, VCRs, everything. It's a good job, begging. Stand at the traffic lights, and you earn good money. Giving to beggars, that's their invaded culture. That means the sannyasis, beggars, who don't beg for a living, but they just beg what they need and they give something to human society. Begging like that is not allowed in Vedic culture. You're supposed to give something to human society. If you take something from someone, you should be able to give something back. It's like we are beggars, we take money from the public. Actually, we're selling books, we're not just begging. But even if we ask a donation, it's because we're giving.